This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. A single word can have huge power and inspire years of debate. That's how it was in naming a remote memorial on Colorado's eastern plains, the Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site. That word, massacre, carries a lot of weight, as historian Ari Kelman writes in a new book. He documents the struggle to memorialize a killing field, where the U.S. Army murdered more than 150 Arapaho and Cheyenne Indians, mostly women, children, and the elderly. This was in November of 1864. Kelman's book is called A Misplaced Massacre. Misplaced because for a long time, it wasn't clear exactly where the killing had occurred. Ari, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. I'm really happy to be here.
This historic site outside the town of Eads in Kiowa County marks where, as you write, gallons of blood were spilled. Why is it such a big deal that the name should include the word massacre? I mean, it seems pretty straightforward, actually.
Well, in some ways it is straightforward. There were three federal inquiries into the violence at Sand Creek in 1865. All three of them found that what happened there was a massacre. Having said that, there were a lot of people who were deeply invested in portraying Sand Creek as a battle, as a glorious battle, as a battle to help civilize the plains in Colorado, to try and make it possible for whites to settle the West, and also, importantly, as a battle in the United States Civil War. And so when you've got different groups of people who have deeply held views about how a different event might have played out very differently, you end up with controversy, and that's the case here.
Much more Indian blood was spilled than white blood, but we should say white troops died at Sand Creek.
Some two dozen white soldiers were killed at Sand Creek, which was a really significant loss in the context, particularly of the Indian Wars. Not a significant loss for a Civil War battle, of course, where sometimes the casualties could sky into the tens of thousands.
So having massacre in the name of this site, it represents something of a first, right?
Well, so this is a great question. I spoke just a couple of days ago with Alexa Roberts, who's the site superintendent now at both Bensold Fort and at the Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site.
Bensold Fort is also on the plains.
That's right. It's located relatively near Sand Creek on the eastern plains of Colorado. And I said to her, hey, Alexa, is it okay that I say that this is the first unit of the National Park System that labels the actions of federal soldiers a massacre? And she pondered for a little bit and said, yeah, I think you're okay with that. So I'm always wary of unprecedented, right? You know, I'm a scholar and we try and be really, really careful not to make mistakes about things like that. But I'm pretty sure that it's certainly unprecedented within the Park Service.
What details about the massacre itself make it unabashedly a massacre? What stands out in your mind about that day in November of 1864 from your research?
The Indian peoples who were there, the Arapahos and Cheyennes who were camped at Sand Creek, believed unequivocally that they had made peace with white authorities in Colorado Territory. In late September of 1864, a group of peace chiefs, including Black Kettle, came to Denver and met with John Evans, the territorial governor at the time, and John Shivington, the colonel who would lead the troops at Sand Creek. Evans effectively punted. He said, I don't really know what to make of your peace overtures. I'm gonna hand this over to Colonel Shivington. Shivington said, look, if you want to make peace, you've got to go down to Fort Lyon. And if you do that, it's up to the commander at that fort whether or not he's going to protect you, whether or not you're going to be safe. The Arapahos and Cheyennes did that. They went down to Fort Lyon. They got the all clear from the commander there, Ned Winecoop, who told them to camp on Sand Creek.
Let me just say that you, in this book and in this interview, names are flying that are all over Denver and Colorado. What Winecoop, Evans. These are people that are safely etched into Colorado history. But continue the story.
Well, and that's right. I mean, this is one of the reasons why the story is so controversial, because it involves so many of the founders of Colorado. At any rate, the Arapahos and Cheyennes, having been told to go to Fort Lyon, they did. They were told that they should camp on Sand Creek. They did that. And so they believed they were being protected by the United States flag. They believed that they were safe. Almost all of the evidence indicates that this was a peaceful camp and that it was made up largely of women, children, and the elderly. And it was then the site of indiscriminate killing.
What do we know about the details afterwards? What happens of the place of a massacre in the days? Let's say the days afterwards.
So immediately following the attack at Sand Creek, Shivington's men, using the language of the day, they take trophies from the killing field. They cut off fingers from their victims. They scalp some of their victims. And then they camp there overnight. And then they leave. Meanwhile, the Arapahos and Cheyennes who survived this ordeal come back to that area and try and gather what they lost. Shivington's troops burned the village there. Nevertheless, they try and recover some of their possessions. They try and recover some of their loved ones. They look for survivors. And then after that, they move as a group and join other bands of Native peoples on the plains.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're speaking with author Ari Kelman, whose new book is A Misplaced Massacre, Struggling Over the Memory of Sand Creek. I want to focus on the construction, then, of this National Historic Site. It opened to the public in 2007, right?
It did.
That is 143 years after the massacre. How does it take that long?
Well, first of all, look, the United States, as a general rule, isn't in the business of memorializing its mistakes. There's very, very few national historic sites, national memorials that document the errors in the nation's history. And so it's an unlikely event for the federal government to decide to memorialize. And it only happens in this case through happenstance. I mean, it really is it's a very, very odd story where a local landowner in Kiowa County decides that he wants to move. And he owns the property that most people believe in 1997 and 1998 hosted the Sand Creek Massacre. He's, for a whole host of reasons, tired of living in Kiowa County. He's had some problems with neighbors. More than that, he's exhausted by the task of being the steward of this land where people come and visit every year. Hundreds, maybe thousands of people in some years come to make pilgrimages to this sacred site. So he decides he wants to sell out. And Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell, who at that time was one of Colorado's senators, gets wind of this. And Senator Campbell has family in the Northern Cheyenne tribe, is himself a member of the Council of 44 Chiefs in the Cheyenne tribe. And he's got a very long history with Sand Creek, and he decides that it's time for the federal government to purchase this property and to take it out of private hands and move it into the public realm.
You write about all of the fears and tensions around that in Kiowa County, right? A government taking is feared by some, and so it becomes another party at the table in the long journey to create this site. Take us there. What does it look like today?
It's a really magnificent place. It's an intact parcel of prairie. It looks to some people quite desolate, but to others, it's actually an incredibly fertile piece of land. And the creek bed itself, it's a meandering stream. The area that's considered most sacred to the descendants of Sand Creek, that area is a bend in the creek. And the creek bottom is covered in cottonwood trees. The Park Service has, for the most part, left it open. It's an unusual memorial in that regard, and it's unusual because it's very difficult to interpret, and the process of interpreting it is ongoing, but also because the killing field itself is sacred soil. It's hallowed ground, and so—
You don't build a gift shop.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. There,
you don't build a gift shop, and you also don't build interpretive trails where some 150 Arapaho and Cheyenne people were killed.
You mentioned descendants of the victims, including Senator Nighthorse Campbell, right? And I'd like to have you read a passage about descendants of the victims of Sand Creek.
For many of the descendants, stories of the massacre were dearly held, passed from one generation to the next, a family heirloom akin to a sacred text. Across nearly a century from the start of the reservation era until relatively recently, Cheyenne and Arapaho people were discouraged, sometimes violently, from telling their Sand Creek stories. Boarding school administrators, Bureau of Indian Affairs officials, and other white authorities believed that keeping alive memories of the massacre preserved links to the past, to a traditional way of life, hindering acculturation. These stories, consequently, took on added significance because they were endangered, and thus preserved away from prying eyes. Steve Brady, for instance, learned about Sand Creek when he was a little boy. He lived in a one-room log house with his paternal grandparents, who oversaw his cultural education. When night fell, Brady often crawled into bed with his grandfather, who told, quote, creation stories, stories of the battles his parents had fought, stories of ordeals, of the massacre, of the good times and the hard times they endured. Laird Komotseva heard the story of Sand Creek from his father, who recounted the family's history outside, usually on camping trips, away from nosy outsiders. And Norma Gorno, another member of the Northern Cheyenne Sand Creek Massacre Descendants Committee, explained that she always cried when relating her family's massacre story, knowing that her memories of Sand Creek came down to her at great cost through the generations.
What's odd here, Ari, and you point to these tensions in your book, is that it's the U.S. government, it's the National Park Service that's working with the tribes to create a memorial. And all those years ago, it was the U.S. government that perpetrated this massacre. How does that play out among the descendants of the victims?
Yeah, it's a really, really difficult disjuncture, right? Because as you say, the federal government was ultimately responsible for the massacre. And yet it's the federal government that decides that it's going to memorialize this event. For the descendants, it's uncomfortable because they've got a very long history of not working especially well or effectively with federal authorities. And so when they're initially approached about creating a Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site, they're thrilled at the idea of protecting the land, but they're not entirely excited about the partner. I think that what makes it possible for this to happen is, first of all, that it's Senator Campbell, and the Sand Creek descendants trust him.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. We're talking about the Sand Creek Massacre and the struggle to memorialize it with historian Ari Kelman. His new book is called A Misplaced Massacre. Misplaced because for a long time, it wasn't clear exactly where the killing had occurred. We're going to talk about that after a break. It's Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Let's get back to our conversation with Ari Kelman, Associate Professor of History at the University of California, Davis. His new book about the slaughter of Indians at Sand Creek in Colorado in 1864 is called A Misplaced Massacre. Something I found fascinating is pinpointing exactly where the massacre took place, because it's not all that certain when this process begins of building a historic site. You even write that the land itself in the 100-some-odd years since the massacre has changed. And so points of reference, I don't know if it's trees or the direction of a creek or something, all that could have changed.
Sure, sure. In 1998, when Senator Campbell decides that he wants to create a Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site, there's real uncertainty about where exactly this event took place. And so the Park Service decides in 1998 that it's going to launch a massive search.
It's a history mystery.
It is indeed a history mystery. That's exactly right. And the Park Service puts together an interdisciplinary team. And I'll just be very candid with you. You know, as the author of a book like this, it's one of those moments where you find yourself thinking, is this really happening? Is the Park Service really putting together, you know, an A-team to try and find this site? And indeed they did. They went and they got their best battlefield archaeologist, a man named Doug Scott, who at the time was involved in locating a number of sites of war crimes in the Balkans. And they bring him in. They bring a man named Jerry Green, a historian, in. A really exceptional historian of the Indian Wars. They bring in a woman named Alexa Roberts, who's an anthropologist who has a great deal of experience working with Indian peoples. And they bring in the descendants themselves, who bring their own methods, their own way of understanding the past. The historians' team finds itself looking for the most part at documents that were produced by perpetrators at Sand Creek, documents produced by Shivington's men. And they discover what they think is a reasonable amount of information, but they're still somewhat flummoxed. And I have to tell you that for Jerry Green and for Doug Scott, this is a deeply frustrating moment because it doesn't make sense that Sand Creek has gone missing. This was, at the time, a massive engagement. more than 1,500 people fighting for their lives. And
you've got bullets, right?
That's exactly
and
right.
You've got...
There should be thousands of bullets. There should be remnants of the Arapaho and Cheyenne camp, which was a big, big camp. It was some 100 lodges, perhaps as many as 1,000 people camped there for a reasonable period of time. There should be a great deal of evidence. There should be a lot of artifacts. But then there's a great moment where an archivist in the National Archives stumbles upon a map which is actually miscatalogued. So Jerry Green looks at this map and he thinks that this is might be the key to figuring out where the site is. Produced in 1868 by a soldier who mapped exactly where the Sand Creek killing field was. The archaeologists go out in the field, and they're armed with metal detectors. And it's a big group of people, and it includes some of the descendants. It includes Park Service employees, and it includes a number of other people. And they go out, and they turn up hundreds of artifacts. And they're the right kind of artifacts.
You write, team members pulled a vast array of equipment from the ground, ordnance including bullets, arrowheads, and cannonball fragments to outfit a small army, domestic materials including skillets, kettles, knives, forks, spoons, cups, plates, bowls, and a coffee grinder to prepare a grand feast. To wrap up, Ari, can the process of memorializing Sand Creek teach us something about new memorials? I mean, these are obviously different circumstances, but my mind drifts to the Aurora Theater massacre, Sandy Hook outside of the state. Now, these are different circumstances, as I said, but what can we glean?
There's a number of different lessons to be drawn from the story of memorializing Sand Creek. I think the first of them is that it's very, very difficult to find a single story that every stakeholder is going to be able to agree upon, particularly when one's trying to tell stories of violence, that in fact you've got to make room for lots of different narratives within the confines of a single memorial. So in the case of Sand Creek, right now we're celebrating the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. And the Park Service has a really difficult challenge on its hands right now, as it always has with Sand Creek. In describing what happened at Sand Creek as a massacre, and in doing so quite rightly, I believe, the Park Service is really going to challenge people who visit this site. And the reason for that is that Sand Creek is not just a part of the Indian Wars. That's how people think of it typically, but it's also part of the United States Civil War. The soldiers who slaughtered the Arapaho and Cheyenne people at Sand Creek were Civil War soldiers. This happened in the context of the Civil War. Governor Evans and Colonel Shivington drummed up a great deal of anxiety in Colorado Territory by pointing to that Civil War backdrop and suggesting that the Arapaho and Cheyenne people were working in league with the Confederacy. Now, as a general rule, and I would include myself in this, by the way, I teach the Civil War, and we tend to think of the Civil War as a good war. And there are very good reasons why we think of it in that way. It was a war of liberation. It's the moment when the United States redeems itself in blood of the sin of slavery. And indeed, it's a story that has its own Christ figure. President Lincoln dies so that the United States might live. And most of us learn this in fifth or sixth or seventh grade social studies. By calling Sand Creek a massacre, by labeling this place the Sand Creek Massacre National Historic Site, the Park Service is going to challenge visitors to think about what really is an irredeemable tragedy. And so for visitors who are coming to the site, they're going to be confronted with a story that's very, very difficult to place within their understanding of history. Now, I would suggest that I think that's the absolute best kind of memorial. I think that memorials are absolutely at their best when they are shot through with the ironies of American history.
Ari, thank you for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Ari Kelman's new book is called A Misplaced Massacre, Struggling Over the Memory of Sand Creek. Kelman teaches history at the University of California, Davis. He's speaking at the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Lodo tonight. Share your thoughts about this conversation and about this chapter in Colorado history on our Facebook page, CPR News.